It's coming on Christmas. They're cutting down trees. They're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. But it don't snow here.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. And we are thrilled to have Ann Powers with us, author of the new book, Traveling on the Path of Joni Mitchell. Celebrated NPR music critic, Powers explores the life and career of Joni Mitchell in her new book. It's a tale of long journeying through a life that changed popular music. For decades, Joni Mitchell's life and music have enraptured listeners. One of the most celebrated artists of her generation, Mitchell has inspired countless musicians, from peers like James Taylor to inheritors like Prince and Brandi Carlile, and authors who have dissected her music and her life in their writing. At the same time, Mitchell has always been a force beckoning us still closer, as with the other arm, she pushes us away. Given this, music critic Ann Powers wondered if there was another way to draw insights from the life of the singular musician who never stops moving, never stops experimenting. The result is the book Traveling, and it's a pleasure to welcome Ann Powers to the roundtable this morning. Ann, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me.
A delight to have you on the program. Greatly admire your work, and it's very nice to have you join us to talk about this particular project. As you say in the introduction, what you're about to read is not a standard account of the life and work of Joni Mitchell. Instead, it's a tale of long journeying through a life that changed popular music, of a homesick wanderer forging ahead on roots of her own invention, and of me on her trail, heading toward the ringing of her voice. At what point did you know that you wanted to follow that trail?
Well, you know, very early on in this project, I realized that I didn't want to do the kind of biography that was just, oh, Joni got up on this day and ate oatmeal and then recorded Hejira. You know, I mean, I wanted to do something that took the reader into those byroads and sort of made unexpected connections that maybe they didn't know about her connections, say, to Florida, or how her music reflects the self-help movements of the 70s. So I knew early on I wanted to take this kind of path. And once I got on it, I couldn't stop.
When you say that you couldn't stop, what ultimately were you looking for? What was the destination?
That's a great question. Every single chapter offered a different destination. The thing about Joni Mitchell, like some of her peers and her favorite peer and pace setter, Bob Dylan, is that she changed so much with every era while always remaining herself. But looking at the 60s, the early 60s, her beginnings obviously took me to the folk revival. Getting into the 70s, I had to learn as much as I could about jazz fusion. In the 80s, well, that's when she gets into synthesizers. And that was a really interesting time to think about and sort of reclaim that music. And then today, how do we deal with her legacy? How does she deal with her legacy? So there was so much to offer, and I was lucky to be on this trail for so long.
So when you say for so long, how long?
Almost 8 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very long time.
And given that I'm just interested in, as we talk about a trail and a journey and looking, I assume there are dead ends, and I assume there are places that right turns that you're expecting to take, and you end up taking a left-hand turn, and that works out better than you could have ever imagined.
There are definitely inquiries I would have liked to have made that just didn't fit in the book. Like, for example, I talk a lot about her youth and childhood in Canada, but I would have liked to have really gotten into what her Canadianness means, you know, what her Canadian voice means, but I just didn't have room for things like that. That will be maybe an essay I publish somewhere else, because it's very important. It just didn't quite fit in my narrative. But that's the thing about even a biography. You want a biography to be exhaustive, but on the other hand, every biographer is making choices, and a life story can be told in a lot of different ways. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You do take us to rural Canada, but you tell us about her battle with polio as a child. How did that influence her life?
Oh, it was profound. Although I'm not sure it was the moment she became an artist, as my esteemed peer David Yaffe, who wrote a great biography of Joni called Reckless Daughter, he asserts that it was when she recovered from polio that she determined to be an artist. But I kind of agree with those who say she already was on the road to being an artist even before that time, which was right around 11, 12. She wasn't very old. But I do think that recovering from polio fed her drive, you know, it fed her determination. And then other things that happened to her not that long after, difficult things she went through, further fed that drive and ambition and gave her the idea that she was on earth for purpose, you know, that she is on earth for a purpose and that she needed to pursue what she could, which is art and music. And she certainly enriched our lives by doing it.
When you think of your own journey on this, what was it? I mean, can you bring us to the time and place when you realized that Joni Mitchell was having an impact in your life?
Yeah, well, when I started the project, someone asked me to do this book, an editor asked me to do the book, and I was a bit resistant because I've been a music critic for a long time. I always like to champion underdogs and outsiders and strange, you know, the weirdos that we don't think of as maybe at the center of the musical canon. So looking at this iconic central artist, I wasn't sure that it's something I wanted to spend years doing. But what I discovered as I got into her life and got into her music and everything that shaped it is that she herself was always an outsider and an insider at the same time. And that there's plenty of quirky, strange stuff about Joni's music and career that I could go into, and I did. I went down those rabbit holes very deeply.
What were those rabbit holes like, in the sense of knowing, of finding something, and maybe even knowing that it's on the horizon, and saying, okay, this is something that I really do need to explore and spend some time in?
Yeah, well, a great example is the jazz fusion chapter. I didn't know that much about jazz fusion. I did love those records that Joni made during the 70s, from Court and Spark through Mingus. You know, I mean, Hejira is right up there with Blue among her absolute classic albums. I also love Don Juan's Reckless Daughter. But I didn't know enough about what was happening in jazz, what was happening in rock during that time. And so I had to just go all out. And I learned so much. I talked to fascinating people like Randy Brecker and Larry Carlton. I learned all about Jaco Pastorius and how important he was to Joni's career. And I realized that she exists in this really interesting space, sort of connecting jazz and rock, and had, even before she started making records that were, you know, overtly jazz.
Yeah. When you, the subtitle of the book is On the Path of Joni Mitchell. Do you feel, I mean, you tell us much about your life. It is very personal. Was that always the intention, or did that surprise even you?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I know some readers have felt, oh, why are we reading about this woman? I want to read just about Joni. But I really wanted to, one of the layers of this book, I guess, is me standing in for the listener, you know, or the fan. And one of the journeys the book takes is of me developing this fandom and putting aside some doubts I had about Joni's music and her persona, getting deep into these different aspects of her life and figuring out, as we all do with our favorite artists, how I identify or don't identify with her, right? I mean, that's how we relate to popular music so often. And I wanted to capture that feeling of someone who listens to music, listens to an album, and says, oh, that resonates with me. That seems to speak to my life. And I found the deeper I got, the more connections emerged.
I mean, to be fair, in the introduction of the book, you say you're not a biographer, but rather a kind of map maker, setting down lines meant to guide others along the trajectories of artists who are always one step ahead of me.
Yes. I was inspired by writers like Janet Malcolm and Jeff Dyer, who've written similar books where they take apart the practice of biography, or you know, the sort of fruitless and beautiful and tragic attempt to tell someone else's life. I wanted to say no biography is complete. Even a memoir and autobiography tells one version of a life story. And we have, each of us has multiple lives that we've lived, and we can tell of those lives in different ways. So this is just one on the shelf, and I hope that people appreciate that.
You also talk about the decision not to interview Joni Mitchell. And
yeah.
I'm curious as to that. It seems like at the beginning it would be like, oh, this, if possible, this is something I would love to do. But by the same token of why you reacted that way to it, I'm curious as to the reasoning.
Well, I've been a music journalist for decades, and I know what happens when the focus of something you're writing, whether it's just a feature article or a whole book, becomes a sanctioned interaction with an artist. What happens is that then that story becomes the official story in one way or another, you know? And especially with an artist like Joni, whose charisma is overwhelming, whose legend is overwhelming, I didn't want to be put in that corner, you know, the corner. I mean, in a sense, I guess it's her corner, which I want to be in her corner, but not in that way. I didn't want this, you know, an encounter and an official story to prevent me from maybe asking questions about decisions she'd made or you know, things I wanted to challenge her about that I knew because she has never, in certain cases, discussed certain subjects and will never. I knew I wouldn't get it from her, so I needed to keep that clear space in order to write some of what I wrote in the book.
You did get to meet her.
Yes, a couple times.
Yeah.
I did. And I hope that those encounters, in both cases, I felt disarmed, let's say, and somewhat embarrassed. And I won't give away the stories, but in both cases, kind of through no fault of her own, but her aura did overwhelm me in some ways. And it just hopefully reinforces my decision to not try to go that deep. I also want to say, though, and I do go deep, but I just didn't go there. You know,
yeah,
I didn't
right.
do an interview with her. But I do want to say, you know, when I started working on this book, it wouldn't have been possible to talk to her because it was not very long after she'd had this very serious health incident, the aneurysm that actually impeded her speech for many years. And so I started the project very unsure if it would even be a possibility. And by the time she started to reemerge, and I do talk to Brandi Carlile for the book, I talked to John Coward, who was music director for some of those early projects Brandi did around Joni. I do talk to people who are close to her, Brian Blade, her ex-husband Larry Klein, for example. But I just, by the time I got to the point where I would have tried to do an official interview, I'd already had a structure and I already knew where I was going. And I knew also that I have so many great words from Joni because she has given so many great interviews over her life. And really, there's also the question of what more can someone tell you when they've told us so much in their art and in the interviews they've done for 50 years, you know?
I was just wondering, and if I'm getting too armchair psychologist, tell me to shut up. but the early encounters with her were prior to writing the book, and then you make
one was prior and well, one was during.
Okay, one was prior, and
yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, does that enter into it? Because I mean, I've had interactions with people, and then I'm like, okay, so that was what it was, and I don't want to screw that up. So let me just not screw that up.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think the time I met her, now almost 20 years ago, which was complicated and somewhat humiliating is a bit of a strong word, but just I was taken aback by what happened. Again, I want people to read the story.
Sure,
so they
no,
can,
absolutely.
They can see. But I don't think it influenced my approach to the book, but it did influence my ideas about her and sort of my in fear of her in a sense, and overcoming that fear or those presumptions I had about her. Presumptions I had about her that were based on her legend, you know, and her status and her charisma and all those things. That is a part of this story. So yeah, I think it definitely, and because that particular story comes late in the book, I hope you see my evolution until we get there and getting to know this figure and getting to know her work and becoming intimate with it.
Absolutely. Again, the name of the new book is Traveling on the Path of Joni Mitchell. It is published by Day Street. Ann Powers, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Very fun. Thank you so much.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Traveling on the Path of Joni Mitchell. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.